You would introduce yourself, spell the parts of the name for me, and then whatever title you'd like for me to use for you, please.
Sure. My name is Aaron Kivisto, A-A-R-O-N, Kivisto, K-I-V as in Victor, I-S-T-O. I am an assistant professor of clinical psychology at the University of Indianapolis.
Yeah, and maybe just a little bit of a back kind of academic and research background that details kind of the expertise you bring to the topic.
Sure, I am a clinical and forensic psychologist by training, and my research focuses on violence perpetration and violence prevention, including gun violence prevention specifically, both homicide as well as suicide prevention efforts.
Okay. All right, so maybe a little background on your most recent study with regard to red flag laws in the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my colleague and I were interested in studying the effects of the red flag laws in Indiana and Connecticut, who were the first two states to have these sorts of laws on the book, Connecticut in 1999, Indiana since 2005. And in the past several years, these laws have gained a lot of attention. We're now at 9 states with these laws on the book, with over a dozen more considering bills. But we focused on Indiana and Connecticut because they're the two states that have had these on the books for over a decade. We are able to derive, you know, some sense of what effects, if any, these laws are having. And in particular, we were interested in looking at the effects of these laws on firearm suicide opposed to homicide. These laws are often introduced in response to homicides, often mass homicide events. In practice, at least in Indiana and Connecticut, these laws have functioned primarily to seize firearms from individuals perceived to be a risk for suicide to a much greater extent than those seen as a risk for homicide.
Yeah. All right. So what did the research seem to indicate?
In Indiana, we saw in the 10 years after our red flag law was enacted, a 7.5% reduction in firearm suicides in the state. Whenever you're looking at this sort of effect, you always want to ask yourself whether you're seeing any sort of a replacement effect or are suicides going up by other means. There's often the argument that if somebody's suicidal and you remove their gun, they'll find another way to go ahead and carry that out. And what we found was a 7.5% reduction in firearm suicides without a real corresponding increase in non-firearm suicides. And in the aggregate, you know, statewide, we saw an overall decrease in Indiana. In Connecticut, we saw a much larger percent decrease in firearm suicides. We saw a 13.7% decrease post-2007, which was when they really started seizing a meaningful number of guns. But we did see a corresponding increase in non-firearm suicides. And so there's more of a question in Connecticut whether we were potentially seeing this kind of full replacement effect. So the evidence sort of across the two states was mixed in terms of, you know, whether these laws were driving down the overall suicide rate or whether there was some replacement, as we saw in Connecticut.
Yeah. You discussed the suicide. Did you also study the homicide rates, or was that not part of the study?
We did not look at the homicide rates in this particular study, but of course that is an open and important question, particularly given the fact that these laws are often at least considered for that very reason.
Yeah. So I'm curious how you adjusted for other possible causes in the drop in the number of suicides.
Yeah, so research going back decades points to a lot of potentially confounding factors that could have explained this. And so in our study design, we took into account as many of these factors as we were able to. So, you know, in our analyses, we were controlling for factors like household firearm ownership rates, alcohol consumption, unemployment rates, sort of, you know, gender, socioeconomic differences known to be affected with suicide rates. And what we were able to determine was that holding all of these other factors constant, we still saw this decrease in firearm suicides, which could not be attributed to differences or changes over time in gun ownership and alcohol and, you know, economic circumstances and things of that nature.
Yeah, yeah. So now the CDC was out, I guess, Friday with some new nationwide and by-state numbers for suicide. I'm guessing you've seen that. I'm curious how you see your research reading into the larger trend that CDC is talking about there of, you know, pretty dramatic increases in suicides.
Yeah, so the report that came out last week obviously highlights the fact that there is a lot of work to be done to reduce suicides. There is this concerning trend that was, I think, well documented in this recent report. I think one important feature that we need to keep in mind is when we talk about suicide, we need to be talking about firearms as well. Something that wasn't particularly front and center in this recent CDC report was the fact that year in, year out, 50% or more of all suicides in our country are committed with a firearm. And so suicide very much needs to be discussed in the context of guns as well.
Yeah, it was. I'm assuming that Indiana's rate was also up over that period, but where did it kind of play in among, where did it end up among the 50 states? Did it have a high rate of change or a relatively low rate of change?
You know, I would need to look to the report to know that. What I can tell you, though, is there is a lot of variation across states in terms of suicide rates. And so, you know, in our study, you know, it's worth mentioning as well that Indiana's suicide rate, while we were documenting the fact that these red flag laws had an effect on reducing firearm suicides in Indiana and Connecticut, throughout our study period, Indiana's suicide rate was over double that seen in Connecticut. And so while we might see these positive effects of particular pieces of legislation, you know, there's still a problem needing to be addressed here.
Yeah, yeah. What's been kind of the political climate around the red flag laws? Have you had time to be concerned at all with, you know, how the law was originally passed and how it's been received in the years since?
In Indiana specifically?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the context of a lot of these laws has been in response to particularly tragic, often high-profile events, and Indiana's was no different. And in Indiana, we had a police officer who was shot by an individual with untreated mental illness who had been recognized to be a risk prior to this incident. And as I understand it, law enforcement had attempted to remove the firearms prior to this incident, which really alerted a lot of folks to the need to be able to have law enforcement seize firearms in these particularly extreme sorts of circumstances. With that as the background, that's certainly one of the reasons that Indiana in 2005 was able to pass this sort of firearm legislation in the context of not a lot of other state-specific firearm laws here in Indiana. It has been challenged at least once, I believe multiple times, gone up to our state Supreme Court, and it has been upheld each time it's been challenged. And so certainly any sort of firearm legislation brings with it some controversy, but it's been legally upheld on multiple occasions, and I'm not aware of current efforts to overturn it that have really gained much traction.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious, and I'll make this the last question, but I'm curious what kind of reaction you've gotten to the research. Obviously, it's an extremely hot, you know, anything to do with guns in the country is, you know, really a hot button issue. So I'm guessing you've gotten both positive and negative response. Can you talk to me about that for a moment?
Sure. The response, you know, has been varied for sure. But my experience with this particular paper has been that we've received much more support than otherwise, and coming from corners of the political atmosphere that we might not have expected to see it. For whatever reason, red flag laws have gained attention. They've been put up in, you know, a couple of dozen state legislatures. They have been at various points endorsed in some form by President Trump. The NRA has at points indicated support for these sorts of laws, which is obviously quite unusual for any sort of firearm legislation. And the response to our paper has, you know, generally been supportive, and we've been contacted by lawmakers of all political stripes, which we find to be a really sort of promising thing. In addition to sort of the more political responses to our paper, though, what's really sort of moved us have been the emails from family members who have lost, you know, family to suicide, expressing concerns that, you know, some have been in states with red flag laws. They weren't aware that these red flag laws were in place or that there were potential additional things that they could have done. And our take home from some of these messages is, particularly in those states that permit family members to petition for removal, some sort of educational component to make the public aware that these are options at their disposal seems like it will be important. Whereas in other states, Indiana being one, family members aren't able to initiate the petition. It's law enforcement only. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how states kind of continue to tweak these laws, whether family members will have more of a say in it, whether it will be primarily directed by law enforcement. But, you know, time will tell with those.